the next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
Hello, fellow Mac users.
It's Chad.
And Tim and PC wannabes. Yep. Buy a Mac. You're using a PC, you're listening to this podcast, just go out and do it.
You know where we stand on the issue. And yeah. Hey, they even make Macs that run Windows now.
So you have your little comfy blankie. It's your little comfy blankie. I can't be away from my PC programs. I have to have access.
Well, at least you don't have to replace all their PC programs.
So. No, although you're going to want to. Doom. Anyway, so yeah, hopefully it's going to be a pretty cool show. We've got an interview coming up, if that goes off without a hitch. We haven't recorded the interview segment yet, so...
Yeah.
As we say this, it, you know, I don't know.
It could or could not, but I think it will.
It might happen. We have a contest this week.
Mm.
And I'm going to... A couple emails came in over the week, and I wanted to address those. I didn't actually bring the emails with me, but it was some kind of questions, like, hey, how do I do this, or how do I do that? So we're going to address those, including talking about AVI files and running programs from a disk image.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to talk a little bit later on in the show, if we have time still, about my review, which will be posted on Friday for Timbuktu Pro 8.6.
Cool.
Isn't that just fun?
Fantastic.
But you know what we have to do first, Chad?
The news.
The news.
And this news is from MacMinute.com. Your up-to-date Mac news in a minute. iPod ban sought by Scottish Teachers Union.
A story in Scotland's The Herald today, today being May 19th, reports that one Scottish teachers union wants iPods banned from schools.
The NASUWT annual conference in Peebles heard that use of gadgets in class created a persistent problem of low level indiscipline, teachers said yesterday. Scottish President Bill Scott goes even further and says that makeup should also be banned.
Makeup. No makeup for you. It's a distraction.
No one needs games or musical gadgets rather than spending money on an iPod or a makeup bag for their children. Parents would do better to give them a pencil case.
Just a pencil case, you little brat. You don't need an iPod. Why, in my day, we had a pencil box with three pencils, and if we rattled it just right, that was all the music we needed.
Along with iPods, the union wants mobile phones and other electronic devices banned as well.
You don't need no stinking electrical devices in school. Just a pencil and a pencil box.
Now, there has been an update to this article with comments from another teacher's perspective on the matter. Mac Minute reader Simon Jowett, a mathematics teacher at the Millthorpe School in York, England, offers a different perspective on using iPods in schools.
In reply to the article about Scottish teach... I can't do an English accent.
In reply to the article about Scottish Teachers Union trying to ban iPods, my school has just the opposite view.
And we say we should kill the Scottish teachers!
Teachers in the math department have been producing video podcasts on various math topics. Pupils can view the podcast through iTunes and on iPods. Rather than trying to ban new technology, we're always looking at ways of exploiting it.
And calling our students pupils. Pupils. They're little pupils. There's pupils everywhere. We don't need electronic devices in our school. Pencil box. Little music make. But if you really want music, people, just put little pebbles in there with your pencils and rattle it. A perfectly good music device. Completely portable, and you don't have to pay any money to the RIAA.
Buy a pencil case.
That's right. Apple Files... Let's go back to my official voice now. Apple Files countersuit against Creative.
Apple has filed a countersuit against Creative, resulting in Creative stock dropping 2.6%, reports Financial Times. Apple alleged Creative infringed on four patents for user interface systems on the digital music players. Knows the story.
One of them is... You have to use your thumb to change the tracks. That's an Apple patent, damn it. Only our device can use your thumb.
Note the story. The suit was filed in response to a similar allegation against Apple by Creative, which is seeking damages and the suspension of sales of the iPod in the U.S.
No one's buying our product. You guys are meanies, man.
Analysts have said that they are not surprised by this countersuit, as the iPod is Apple's fastest-selling product. Financial Times reports that Apple currently holds 77% of the U.S. market compared to Creative's less than 10%.
We're going to sue our way to profitability, damn it. If you're not going to buy our products, we're just going to sue the company of the product that you do buy. We have patents.
The analyst goes on to say that there may be opportunity for Creative in Scotland making pencil cases.
So. And dried coffee beans.
That's right.
I'm going to skip down a little bit because this kind of goes with it. It's the last page.
Got it.
Idont.com, Idont, IDEONT.com, is a new site. Did I spell it wrong?
No,
okay.
That's right.
You were making noise over there. I thought, oh, is he going to correct me?
No.
You're just going to correct me in front of all these people. You're just such an insensitive bastard.
No, I wouldn't do that.
I don't.
There, I just corrected you. Are you happy now?
Just got to screw with me. There's a new site that calls iPod users sheep.
It's a bad idea.
The site is trying hard to appear to be an underground swell of people who think the iPod is bad. Some PR from the site reads, and by the way, there's pictures of sheep wearing little iPod earbuds.
Calling all free thinkers, contrarians, and malcontents, the time has come to rise up against the itatorship.
Itatorship is
itatorship.
Yeah, itatorship.
To resist the monotony of white earbuds and reject the oppressive forces of cultural conformity.
I personally think Mr. Potato Head Company is going to sue him for the itatorship thing.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Now is the time to break free from restrictive formats and a single source for music. It's time for choice, for freedom, for self-expression, and for all independent spheres to stand up and say, I don't, you don't need to follow. There's now an alternative.
So what is idont.com advocating? Why? Buying an MP3 player from SanDisk, of course.
Eureka.
Called the Sansa.
Sansa.
Sounds like a new tortilla chip or maybe a dip. Hey, do you have any Doritos with Sansa? Or maybe a new soft drink? Hey, honey, I'm going to the fridge. Anybody want a Sansa? If it's a hot day, quench your thirst with a Sansa.
Sansa.
I like it. I like the name. It doesn't sound like an MP3 music player.
Mm-hmm.
Sansa.
It's a Sansa.
Every now and then, let's just throw that out there. Instead of saying iPod for now on, let's say Sansa.
Sansa.
Or not. Bad. Oh, I lost my place because I'm jumping ahead.
SanDisk, of course, is also breaking into the pencil case market in Scotland. So,
May 18th, the Apple Store 5th Avenue opens and it is 24/7. Apple today announced it will open its newest retail store on New York's 5th Avenue on Friday, May 19th. So it's already open. In fact, it was all over the web, all over the Mac web so much last week, I almost got sick of hearing about it. The Apple Store, 5th Avenue, is Apple's most
architecturally
innovative store, featuring a distinctive 32, blah, 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 blah. Everybody's hearing this, has already seen the pictures.
It's a big, clear cube that goes down in the basement where the Apple
store is. It's a great big cube. And I was going to lead in a little bit with this, that John Martellaro, one of our writers at MyMac.com, also writes for Mac Observer. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a column at the Mac Observer talking about the design for the Power Macintosh, what it's going to look like, the replacement, when it obviously switches over to the Intel processor sometime this year, which I think is probably going to be sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And I think they're just going to keep around the Power Mac line and the new ones.
Yeah.
So if it's Creative Professional and they need to run the latest and greatest, but they have to run it natively in PowerPC, they still have the G5.
Yep.
Everybody else needs a new tower. You don't care about Adobe or whatever. At least
you get the Intel.
Yeah, you get the Intel one. He says it's, in his learned opinion, it's going to be a pizza box type of shape. You know, we've had Macs, flat, basically.
Mm.
And that would fit more into, instead of Apple doing a separate media PC type of computer, it would simply be, it would dub as that as well. So it would look good in a stereo cabinet. I think that's a fine idea. I don't think that's what's going to be.
Yeah, I'm thinking for people that have like two or three drives or hard or disks already installed on the computer. I mean, how are you going to fit that into a pizza box configuration?
Well, there's definitely ways. I mean, you look at the X-rays. I mean, they fit in there just fine.
Yeah.
I personally think that Steve Jobs is going to push for a design that he really, really enjoyed in the past, and this store gives you a big clue about it.
So you think he's bringing back the cube?
I think it's going to be a cube. I really do. It's going to be much smaller than the current G5s because they don't need so much airflow to cool it down. They still want to be able to fit in, you know, a nice graphic card, memory slots, PCI slots, internal hard drives, all that. But they can do all that relatively easily in a smaller cube size. Apple puts this great big glass cube on their new store on Fifth Avenue. What do they put right above it? A big glass cube, a 32-foot glass cube. So wouldn't it stand a reason that maybe the next G5 is going to be a cube? I mean, what happened with the original cube? It had nowhere in...
Personally, I think it's the sixth hatch from Lost. You know, you got the swan, you got the dolphin, you got the fire, you got the cube.
You got the cube. But yeah, seriously, I can see Apple doing this. Steve Jobs really, really dug the original G4 Cube, but it was it didn't fit in a high end,
right?
And it didn't fit in a low end because they already had the iMac there with a built-in monitor. So here's a computer that didn't have much expandability. So you're not going to get the pro users,
right?
The home users already have or were going to buy an iMac. What's that leave? It had nowhere else to go.
Right.
So it just kind of floundered and sunk. I mean, the only people who bought it usually were people who already had a Macintosh, and this was so cool they had to have it. Rodney O'Lane, back in the day, was fit that description. But what if there was no Tower Mac anymore, and the Tower simply became the Cube? Now it has automatic marketplace. I mean, you know right where it's going to fit.
Right.
It would probably have to be bigger than the original Cube, which is okay, as long as it's not 32 foot, you know. But that's what I think. I think it's going to be a cube. My opinion. We do have an interview coming up, but he's not online at the moment, so we're just going to...
No, he's...
We can wait for a minute.
Okay.
Let's finish up the news. Nike and Apple partner to launch... Launch Nike Plus iPod Global.
Yep, this is from May 23rd. Nike and Apple today announced a partnership bringing the world of sports and music together with the launch of innovative Nike and iPod products. The first product developed through this partnership is the Nike and iPod Sport Kit, a wireless system that allows Nike footwear to talk with an iPod Nano to connect users to the ultimate personal running and workout experience. The new Nike Plus Air Zoom Wire is the first footwear designed to talk to iPod.
Many people thought this was a Bluetooth solution for the iPod, that the shoe and the iPod were going to communicate via Bluetooth, but it's not. It actually uses a proprietary RF technology that allows the shoes to communicate with the iPod. And since Chad and myself are out of shape, you know, fat guys, we'll be looking into this product with rapt attention. Also up next, the Chad and Tim iPod Diet Book.
Oh, sweet.
So get cracking. All right, we're not real fat, but we both have bellies now.
Yeah.
You're a fat bastard. Get into my belly.
Get into my belly. Go get a pencil case.
Sansa.
Sansa.
Quark announces the release of Quark Express 7. How much does the new version cost? $749.
Wow.
On a related topic, Adobe has asked us to remind our listeners that for $11.99, or only $450 more, users can purchase Creative Suite 2 and get not only what many call a Quark killer, Adobe InDesign, but also Illustrator, Photoshop, Go Live, Acrobat Professional, Version Q, and Bridge. While we are not saying that Quark Express is overpriced, we do feel compelled to let our listeners know every option available to them. On a side note, Quark 7 is not universal binary, meaning that even though Intel Macs have been on the market for 5 months, Quark Express, released 5 months after that fact, is still not Intel Mac ready.
Oh.
Yeah, ain't that cool?
Oh.
And hockey fans, rejoice!
That's right, the NHL is now selling 20-minute highlight clips on iTunes for $1.99.
That's a great deal for people who love hockey.
Yep.
That's not me, I'm a football guy.
Ah.
I like watching hockey in person, but...
I'm a football guy, too.
And we're football men.
Sasa.
Bah.
Email, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for wireless takeoff from the living room. Internet, this is Apple Airport Express. You're cleared for landing in the kitchen. iTunes, this is Apple Airport Express. You're coming in nice and easy on our wireless runway.
Apple Airport Express from Small Dog Electronics. Wireless networking anywhere you are. Browse, email, print, even listen to music. Wireless. Go wireless now with a 12-inch iBook, Airport Express, and carry case for $11.49. Small Dog Electronics in Waitsfield and on the web at smalldog.com. Small Dog is wireless.
Listening to the Dashboard Minute, heard exclusively right here on the MyMac.com podcast.
Please hang up and try again.
Welcome again to another Dashboard Minute. I'm your host, Guy Searle, and I'm naturally part of the overall madness of the MyMac.com podcast, an area of the world somewhat less defined than what your reality may be part of. So sit back, fasten your seatbelt, and get ready for a 5-minute or less excursion into the dashboard zone. The first widget is an interesting departure from what is the usual in most of the ones that I have reviewed. In some ways, this is a widget that could be used for good or evil. It's called the Sing That iTunes widget, and it's from the oh-so-devious mind of Toru Yano from Japan. But it will be much easier to find at either the Apple Dashboard Download site or some of the other widget sites around the web than from Mr. Yano's site. What this widget does is look at the current song playing on iTunes and search on the web for the lyrics of that song to display. So I suppose you could think of it as an instant karaoke machine, hence the evil part. If the lyrics are available, they are displayed within the widget. Not bad, and I guess it could be considered a success for doing something different, but this widget isn't quite finished yet. It also goes into the information kept within iTunes for each song while it is played, and it stores those lyrics in iTunes if you have that preference marked on the back side of the widget. You can also set the lyric sheet for either Chinese or Japanese languages. You can set the text size as well, and display the artwork for the album currently in play either within the widget or sent to iTunes. Clicking onto the album art at the top left of the widget brings up an iTunes controller for starting, stopping, or skipping forward and backwards through your library or playlist. This widget is free, but a donation through PayPal can be made by clicking the donation button at the bottom of the widget. With the exception of its possible evil karaoke use, this is a pretty good widget, especially for those times when no amount of re-listening can help you figure out just what the person singing is saying. Internet connectivity is required for this widget to operate. Next up on this odyssey of oddness is a widget to stir your memory if a particular keyboard shortcut doesn't come to mind. Point your mouse avoidance fingers to F12 and bring up dashboard to check out the X-Cuts widget from Leyland Scott from the Musing from Mars website. X-Cuts shows all the keyboard shortcuts for most general needs. It doesn't go into specific applications for their shortcuts, but lists all the ones created by Apple for OS X. The database for this widget is part of the widget, but will go online for updates as required. It uses some pretty cool effects for sliding between the different menu choices, and you can choose between seeing all shortcuts, categories like data processing or user interface, scopes like dashboard or the finder, or objects like folders and windows. Find this widget at the Musings from Mars website or the ever-popular Apple Dashboard download page. You can find all the links mentioned at the MyMac site under the features section for this very podcast. This dashboard is now complete, and we will return you to the MyMac.com podcast with Tim and Chad. However, if you have a favorite widget you would like me to talk about, I can be contacted via email at dbminute@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time on the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast.
The Dashboard Zone.
Sweet.
I like that. And Guy sounding really good there.
Yes, he is.
You know, Guy, what you're going to have to do is give us a podcast review of your new audio setup. Let us know what you're using. Mm-hmm. And how you're achieving that magic sound.
The dulcet tones of Guy Searle.
It's really cool. seriously, the Dashboard Minute sounded great there.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to jump to an interview that we did earlier, and recorded earlier, I should say, with AJ at Market Circle.
Mm-hmm.
The interview itself was really great. Unfortunately, yep. There was this huge delay in when we would speak and AJ would hear us. So it's a little choppy, but and we apologize for that, but that's just sometimes you have to work with the delays and the inadequacies in the current technology.
Mm-hmm.
As great as a telephone over the internet may be, it's still not as, you know, instant sometimes as it probably
standard,
should be.
Yeah.
So we do apologize for any of the bloopers, I guess you would say. But I think you'll still get the gist of the conversation, and we want to thank AJ for doing the interview. Here's our interview with AJ at Market Circle.
Ali Conjetta is the CEO of MarketCircle.com. For those of you not familiar with Market Circle, they make a productivity suite known as Daylight 3, among others. How are we doing, AJ?
We're doing great. How about yourselves?
Fantastic. I just noticed you guys got featured on Call for Help just this last Friday. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. That was a great 5 minutes there.
Well, we'll go a little longer than the 5 minutes, but we probably don't have the viewership or the listenership as Call for Help does.
Yeah, it's a great little show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's got one of my heroes, Leo Laporte. Gotta love the guy. I also saw today all over the Mac web links to your website because your program just was released.
Well,
version 303 got released today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Chad has done his homework a lot better than I have, so I'm going to let Chad ask some questions here because actually I have to step out of the room for a minute.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and just start with the first one. AJ, can you give us a little history of Market Circle?
Well, Market Circle started out originally in 1999. We were a .com that a web app that allowed you to negotiate a price for a product online. So you think of eBay, remove the auction model and put in a negotiation model, and that's what we started out with.
Hmm.
But when we went to get funding, we were kind of late. So the bubble was bursting as we were trying to raise some funds to, you know, take the idea to the next step. And so realizing this, we backtracked and, got into our caves a little bit, did a little bit of consulting to bring up the cash flow back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that, we had a need for an application for ourselves to manage our business, our growing business. And so we had a couple of options there. We could migrate to Windows,
right,
and use the applications there. And we could have continued doing our web development work on Windows. There was no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But or the other option was to develop something of our own. We had searched the Mac space and didn't find an appropriate solution. So we said, we either got to do our own solution or we got to go the Windows side. But we have an allergy to Windows.
Yeah.
So we decided that the world needs more choices. So we would make an application that would work in the Mac, that would help us. And in that process, people at Apple, other people on the web got wind of what we were doing and asked us to, buy the program from us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said it was internal. You can check it out. We can show it to you. You can use it for a little bit if you want. And one thing led to another, and now we're just selling Daylight. And we have another application called Billings as well. Mm-hmm. So now we've gone from a .com to a consulting, a web development consulting company to a pure product company, which we are now.
I don't know how to explain that. This seems like a strange circle to go into to get to the point where you're at now.
It definitely is a strange circle, but the motivation behind there was survival. The .com didn't work. We could have tucked tail and run and leave the investors high and dry, which was mostly friends and family.
Yeah, I was going to say that shows a lot of resiliency on your guys' part to stick it out through that really rough period in the tech industry.
Yeah, it was very rough, and we just myself, Mike, who's our VP of engineering, we just didn't want to. We just didn't want to stiff the investors, which were mostly, you know, friends and family. So, you know, it kind of we had to do something about it. So we said, you know, we can do consulting. We're really good at that stuff, and so we did. And we, you know, brought the financial levels back to normal. And we knew we didn't want to do that forever. And so, you know, Daylight came to be kind of in a roundabout way. It wasn't designed that way. It happened to be an accident. And a good accent by the sounds of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got to say, I use iCal. Well, I have used iCal quite a bit in the past, but I really like your calendar. I think it looks a lot more cleaner and a lot easier to follow what's going on.
Yeah, we've done a lot of work in the calendar area. One of the main objectives of Daylight 3 as opposed to Daylight 1 was a whole new UI and a whole new calendar. And the calendar took us quite a while to, you know, to get it right. And we're still perfecting it. You're going to see some changes still happening, little changes here and there. So we're going to continue perfecting it.
Okay, for the folks out there not familiar with the Daylight Productivity Suite, can you give us kind of an overview of the whole product package and what they can use it for?
Sure. So what I'll tell you what the target is, and that'll help you understand the product. And it's we target small Mac-based businesses that are between 1 and 50 users. So you can think of small design studios, you can think of small ad agencies, recruiting firms, marketing firms, etc. Any kind of company that needs to collaborate on their contacts, their calendar, projects, opportunities, etc., can use Daylight to run their business, so to speak, on the front end. We're not an accounting package or anything like that, but we help you run your business in terms of objectives that you got to meet, monies that you got to bring in, calendars that you got to share, and contact information that you got to share. And there's a lot more other sharing happening in there, but those are the big nutshells.
So a big, it's really an online.
And we also have mail integration. Well, it is a tool that it's not an online. It's not a web-based tool. It is a client-server-based tool, so you have a database, which happens to be a product called OpenBase. So it's a SQL database, and you have a COCO application that's the client, and you can connect on your local network from, let's say, a laptop to a server in the server room. You can connect locally if you have the database on the local machine, or you can connect over the Internet using an IP address. So we have quite a bit of flexibility in how we can get to the data from the application.
Any plans on...
Now that application... Go ahead.
I know that we're talking over the Internet right now, so we're having a little bit of...
Latency
problems and a little bit of a delay. So I'm just going to let you go for a minute because I keep trying to interrupt you, and and I don't mean to.
Okay, all right. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to talk about a little bit about what the evolution of the product in terms of what we're trying to solve in this day and age. Mm-hmm. With Daylight 3, what we've done is if you have a small business and you think you need Outlook and Exchange, which are typical products on the PC side, well, we can do that with Daylight 3 and our mail integration module called DMI. Or our productivity suite, which is both of them together. And so what that does is it gives you the calendar sharing that you're typically used to in Exchange with the meeting setups and et cetera. It gives you the global address list, which you have in Exchange, which is basically contact sharing. Mm-hmm. It gives you email integration with Apple Mail. So we have a module that plugs into Apple Mail, and it makes Apple Mail seamlessly integrate with Daylight. And then the emails are stored in the Daylight database. So, for example, if you received an email, we're in the same company, and you received an email, I can go and look at that particular contact, see that email in Daylight, and your, you know, your computer doesn't have to be on or anything like that. Oh, it is stored in the database. And in context to the contact, the project, or the opportunity. So when you're looking at an email, if you happen to tie that contact to a project, for example, or to an opportunity, then that email can also be tied to those elements. So you can see that this email is with John in regards to this project. And you can get to the email from the project, you can get to the email from John. So we have this you know, super linking kind of context that gives you relevant information. So very powerful solution. We try and make it as easy as possible, but it is, you know, there is a little bit of a learning curve to it. Mm-hmm. But the benefits to it are huge.
Is Daylight 3 a universal binary already?
It is a universal binary, and it just positively screams on Intel machines.
How about...
It is actually quite fast. So
go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that we were shocked at the performance difference between a PowerPC and an Intel machine when we were testing Daylight recently, for example, on a MacBook Pro versus a PowerBook. Mm. And the performance difference was huge.
Wow. Now, I know some of our listeners still use, some use BlackBerries every day, some use Palm OS. How does Daylight integrate with, handheld PCs?
We can synchronize with the Palm OS, and so we have our own conduits that synchronize data from a Daylight database for the current user, for the user that is synchronizing, with a Palm device. So the basic, contact, tasks, appointments, and notes get synchronized.
Hmm.
And then in regards to the BlackBerry and the Pocket PC, we integrate with Pocket Mac, and we're able to synchronize through them. And so they're also tweaking. There's going to be a release of Pocket Mac that addresses a couple issues that have been raised recently. But basically, the basic synchronization does work with BlackBerries and Pocket PCs.
Do you have any plans in the future of adding widgets or anything like that, so someone could call up a widget and quickly see linked data to Daylight in a widget window?
Well, we have actually something that is interesting. We have what we call the quick search window. Which is, you can hotkey from any application, quickly search something, and look it up. And that, includes contacts, projects, opportunities, organizations, and groups that just quickly finds. We also have a global hotkey for creating tasks from any location. So you can quickly create a task, put it in Daylight, and then, go about your business. So we don't have widgets per se, dashboard widgets. But we do have our own kind of widgets, which we call HUD widget, heads-up display.
Mm-hmm.
So what they are is, let's say that you're looking at a contact. Well, somebody can write a widget, which is basically an HTML page that loads up into Daylight. There's some magic that happens underneath, and we can give you relevant information about that contact in this HUD widget.
Wow.
And that could be, for example, the weather. And so what it is that little HUD widget is really a mini Safari browser. And you can have as many of these as you like, and it's really, it's very simple to add a widget and make them available to either all types of objects or specific objects and do certain things like a stock ticker check when you're looking at a company. You want to see, how their stock is performing. You could easily make a widget that does that and actually check the stock as you're talking to them on the phone. The other one is, for example, with projects, you could easily create a little widget that's a form that submits project information with additional information that you would add to an online application, like a PHP-style application or a web app. And right from within Daylight in context to the object that you have selected and looking at. So it's a very cool concept that we call those HUD widgets.
Hmm. Now, I know you started the program basically in what, 2002?
Actually, 99.
Sorry. Oh, 1999, I'm sorry.
Well, no, the company started in 1999. And the application, we started development in 2001, and we shipped in 2002, April.
Hmm. Where do you see the product, say, 10 years from now?
Well, we see it as a dominant player in the Mac small business. And the evolution of the product, I think we will lead us that way, because all our customers right now are small businesses. The feedback that we're getting along with the ideas that we have or where we want to take it will take us that way. So we have, you know, for example, the calendar stuff that you expect in the meetings, the mail integration, we have the projects. And so, you know, we're going to be making this application into the must-have application for any Mac business as we go forward.
So
you're going to run your business efficiently, be competitive.
So what else can we expect to see from Market Circle in the future then?
Well, you're going to see continued development on the Daylight side.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see an update to our Billings product called Billings 2. You know, currently we have Billings 1.1 out there, and that's a separate application for single users,
mm-hmm.
and it's a timing invoicing application. You're going to see other developments to Daylight that I can't talk about right now. Because until it's actually true, until it actually happens, it may not happen. You know, you never know with these things. So,
yeah.
So we have quite a few ideas that that we're working on.
The flagship product.
We have our development team has an. Sorry, say that again.
No, go finish. Go. I'm sorry.
I was saying that the engineering team has been hard at work. Devising and developing and speccing the next generation of product.
The flagship product is Daylight 3. The company is Market Circle. Go to www.marketcircle.com for more information. It looks like a fantastic program. I think most small business Mac users are going to love it. It's affordably priced, and we thank you, AJ, for coming on the show and talking to us today.
Thanks, AJ.
Great. Thank you very much.
If you're a Mac user and you need a hosting service for your website, why would you want to host your site on anything else but a Macintosh? Anotech has been hosting the MyMac.com website for over 7 years, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Are they the cheapest web hosting company in the world? No. Do they offer the largest amount of server space of bandwidth in the world? Of course not. But with Anotech, you don't get pie-in-the-sky false promises, just the best customer service, the most popular hosting service plans, and everything running on the latest Apple Macintosh server gear. Check them out at www.inotech.com/mymac for special pricing. That's www.inotech.com/mymac. Inotech, the trusted web server of mymac.com for over 7 years. That's like 49 dog years.
For people who want the ultimate in laptop computer protection, there's a company called OtterBox that is releasing three different sizes of their notebook computer case for small, medium, and large computers. The prices are $120, $130, and $150 for the 12-inch, 15-inch, and 17-inch case. These cases are virtually indestructible, and they're waterproof. They have a terrific strap, a lock, Velcro little bumpers inside to protect your laptop from bouncing around, padded construction. This is a great case. It just arrived, and what I have is the prototype. So even though MyMac.com does not normally review a product that is not in full production, this week in reviews you can use that won't make you snooze, we are looking at a very, very high quality pre-release model of the rugged carrying case for laptops from OtterBox. It's got a very comfortable handle. Like I said, it's got a lock, strap. What's this thing made out of? Rugged, high-impact polypropylene construction. It seems to me you should get the largest one, because when you've got your laptop inside the small or the medium case, even though it's a snug fit, there's not room for anything else, not even the power adapter, an extra battery, or anything else. So in our first look at these new laptop carrying cases from OtterBox, and look at the show notes for the website and the links, we are giving this a very, very strong rating. Let's start with a provisional 4.5 out of 5. And after the final model arrives, I'm going to take it in the swimming pool, use it as a kickboard, kick it up and down, toss it a few times with and without my laptop. Oh boy, wish me luck. And thank you for listening to Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze on the MyMac.com podcast. We have a nutritional tip this week. I just opened up my backpack for the first time since Macworld in January, and the chocolate chip cookie I got on the last day looks as good or as disgusting as the day that I got it. So if you want your chocolate chip cookies to last forever, whether or not you eat them, get them at Moscone Center. John Nemo signing off.
And thanks, Nemo, for the review of the OtterBox. Sounds like a cool product. And thanks to Innotech.com for being one of our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of sponsors, Chad, we have a returning sponsor this week.
And that would be?
Ramjet.
Oh, yeah.
Ramjet was a sponsor for a while, and they're back, which is very cool. Obviously, we love sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Sponsors pay to allow us to be on the internet and doing these shows, because it's not really cheap when you have as many listeners as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Bandwidth costs can eat you alive sometimes.
You got it.
But, you know, beside that, the benefit to us, let's talk about Ramjet for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
More specifically, as you know, Apple came out with the MacBook, not the MacBook Pro. This is the eyeless MacBook.
Yeah.
the iBook replacement.
Mm-hmm.
What kills me, it looks like a great machine, don't get me wrong.
Right.
I want one. No mm-hmm. question. I want a black one.
Yeah.
I want to be cool like Bill Palmer.
Shit. Are you kidding?
No, I do, really. I'd really like to get one, but here's what kills me. If you go up to Apple Store, Apple.com, obviously, in the Apple Store,
mm-hmm.
and you order one, and you go, you know what, 512 megabytes really isn't enough. I want to max this out.
Sure.
Maxing out a MacBook is 2 gigabytes. That's the most RAM you can put into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose, when you're buying the MacBook, if you go for the 2 gigabyte version mm-hmm. in RAM, that's an extra $500.
That's if you're ordering it from Apple, correct?
Apple.
Yeah.
If you buy one from Apple and get the 2 gigabyte option for RAM,
mm-hmm.
$500 more. $500? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm blown away by that, quite honestly, because RAM isn't that expensive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to buy a MacBook and you're going to spend that much money for a consumer laptop,
mm-hmm.
say here's a good way to save $250 right off the bat.
Okay.
Go up to Ramjet. They have memory now for the new MacBook.
Hmm.
2 gigabytes. Just as good as what you can get from Apple. It's the same RAM. $259.
Wow.
2 gigabytes. $259 compared to $500.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even a comparison.
Yep.
What's the benefit from getting it at Apple at that price? There isn't one.
No.
It's ridiculous.
Well, you're already paying $150 premium for a black MacBook.
Yeah. $150 extra just for the color. And you're going to pay another $500 just to get 2 gigs of RAM?
No.
That's crazy. Spend $259 at Ramjet, ramjet.com.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yes, they're a sponsor, but man, $500 for 2 gigs of RAM, that's preposterous.
Yeah.
That's really preposterous. I like Apple, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but Apple, come on, guys, $500 for 2 gigs of RAM?
Mm-hmm.
That's highway robbery. And you know what? The other aspect of that is some people say, well, yeah, but Apple will install the RAM for me in my MacBook. Well, you know what? Installing RAM on a MacBook is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's videos online that I saw the folks over at Macworld did. It's up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's real simple. You take out the battery, you take out one little plate, and it's right there. It pops in, pops out. It couldn't be simpler. And besides, if it's your computer, it's your MacBook, choose to install the RAM yourself. Get used to that MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
If something goes wrong with your computer, why should you have to rely on someone else to come help you? Start learning about your computer, not just the operating system,
mm-hmm.
not just how to put a DVD in and out of the drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good way for people to go ahead and get used to their MacBook. Don't be scared of it. Installing RAM is simple.
Mm-hmm.
So save $250. Do it yourself.
You got it.
Go to ramjet.com and they will hook you up. Obviously, we have a contest that we talked about at the beginning of the show. I want to get into that, and then we'll talk about
some listener feedback.
Yep. The contest this week, remember we talked to Bruce G a couple weeks ago at G3.com.
Yep.
And I said during that show that I've used his slick transition and effects since Volume 1, you know, back in 2001, and I've always really dug the software. And nothing's changed. He actually was real nice. And after I talked to him and said, hey, Bruce, why don't we give away a copy of, say, version 9 and 10 on the podcast? And Bruce was like, cool, let's do it. So that's what we're going to do.
Cool.
This is Slick Transitions and Effects, Volume 9 and 10. It's not just 9. It's not just 10. It's 9 and 10. That's a $120 value, and I personally think it's worth every penny.
Yep.
How do they enter the contest, Chad?
They send us an email, and in the headline, put in Slick Transitions, and in the body, put in your name, address, and phone number.
Make sure you include your phone number, more specifically, the phone that we can reach you at from 6 to 8 Eastern Standard Time during the week.
Yep.
Why do we do that?
Because we want to call you and tell you you've won.
Or at the very least, we want to start pranking people. And that's the easiest way. If you supply us with phone numbers, we can call and prank people. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So I want to thank G3.com, specifically Bruce G., for supplying Slick Transitions and Effects Volume 9 and 10. Really cool. It makes iMovie worth having.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously, if you didn't listen to that show, Slick Transition and Effects works within iMovie, and it works with the new iMovie. So if you've got the latest and greatest iMovie, here are some of the latest and greatest effects and transitions. You're going to love it.
Yep.
It's a really cool contest. $120 value. It doesn't cost you a thing to enter the contest. We never, ever share your email address with anybody. Mm-hmm. We're not going to sell your email address. We're not spammers. Mm-hmm. We're Mac users just like you, and we respect your privacy.
And your emails get sent to contest@mymac.com.
We will draw the winner on or before midnight on Tuesday, May 30th. So the end of May, the next show we record will be May 31st. Wow, mm-hmm. we're almost in June already.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? It just doesn't seem like it's been that long, and yet half the year is almost here.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely enter the contest. Let's talk a little bit about some feedback.
Okay.
It's not specifically feedback. It's questions that I've got over the last week or two.
Okay.
And I picked a couple of them that I wanted to talk about. The first one is I got an email from somebody basically asking, I downloaded this piece of software, and I double-click it, and it puts a little disk of it on my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're running the disk, running the program from that image.
Right.
From that disk. The problem is when they reboot the computer, that image is gone. And then they have to double-click what they downloaded again and launch it again. And they were asking, why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. Well, here's what happens. When you download a disk image and you double-click it, it mounts a virtual disk on your hard drive. It shows up right on your desktop. Mm-hmm. It's not a real CD. It's not a real floppy disk. It's not a,
right.
It's none of that. It's a disk image. And what you're supposed to do is copy the contents within that folder, within that disk image, mm-hmm. to your hard drive.
Yep.
Can you run programs through a disk image? Sure. Mm-hmm. And actually, they run pretty fast because it's loaded into memory at that point.
Yeah.
But you're really supposed to copy it to your hard drive. Do you have to? No. But that's what you're supposed to do. And yeah, I understand why people have problems understanding that concept, because you download one thing, you double-click it, it puts something else on your desktop. Mm-hmm. Now you're supposed to double-click that, and what's in there, you drag that to your hard drive, your applications folder, or wherever mm-hmm. it needs to be. Sometimes if you double-click what's inside that folder, it's an installer, and it literally installs it on your hard drive. Mm-hmm. Most Mac OS 9 and classic users, that's what you were used to. You would download something, and it would install mm-hmm. an installer on your computer. You would yep. run the installer, the application is put onto your computer. Sometimes it's not just an application. It could have been an extension or a control mm-hmm. panel or fonts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mac OS 10, usually, most installations are drag and drop. Sometimes you have to run an installer, such mm-hmm. as Microsoft Office programs, because there's so much of it, you just don't right. copy it over. It literally has to install different software in different places, mm-hmm. including fonts and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you can run a lot of software from a disk image. You're really supposed to install it.
Yep.
So there you go. Also, somebody else says, do they have to put all their applications in the applications folder? No, you don't have to. You can put the applications pretty much anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. The problem is, what happens is a lot of programs have self-updaters where it goes and it checks to see if something's mm-hmm. updated or not. If it's not in the applications folder, sometimes it can't find it. It gets confused. So, yeah. They created the applications folder for a reason. They created the documents folder for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can use them. You don't have to, but if you want to try to keep things organized, I try to put all my applications in the applications folder.
Yep.
It's a lot easier to find that way. I got another question. They said, somebody emailed me and said, hey, Tim, I downloaded some AVI files on my Mac. Those are video files.
Yep.
When they come in, they show the little QuickTime icon, but when I double-click them, nothing happens. QuickTime will not play it. Says mm-hmm. it's just unable to play this. What's going on? That is a problem. And I have to admit right now, I've broken the law.
You have. What'd you do?
Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Yep. I don't have any AVI files on my Mac. Almost everything I download is in QuickTime format.
Right.
Or MPEG format. Mm-hmm. So I went out and I wanted to find some AVI files. Well, I also wanted to experiment with this whole BitTorrent thing. Everybody mm-hmm. always talks about BitTorrent and, you know, it's great and you can get all this stuff for free. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about pirating software, but there's just so much stuff out there that it's right. a good way to download content using peer-to-peer software
mm-hmm.
where you're not just downloading it from one central server. You could be downloading it from four or five different people
right.
across the entire globe. So I thought, well, I need to download some AVI files. I want to test this out to make sure that my solution works for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where I broke the law. I was downloading, I went to the piratebay.org. It's a big, huge, I mean, look at the name, Pirate Bay.
Right.
And I saw Penn and Teller, their bullshit series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that to ooh, he said bullshit. That's the name of the show.
That's the
bullshit.
Name of the series. Right.
It's on Showtime. I don't have Absolutely. Showtime at home.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen the show. I always heard good things about it,
yeah.
but I'm not going to go out and buy, I'm not going to buy any DVDs, and I'm not mm-hmm. going to order Showtime just to see it. I don't care how great it is.
Right.
I saw that somebody had, I don't know who that somebody is, but I saw seasons 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
So I thought, and it said it was in AVI format, so I mm-hmm. thought, well, I'm just going to download that, because I'm a pirate now.
Arr,
sasa. And so I downloaded it. It took like 3 days to download.
Mm.
Ooh, there's instant gratification for you.
Yeah.
I'm a pirate. But first I have to go to sleep a couple days because it's going to take that long. I mean, it was like 20 gigs. I mean, it wasn't yeah. a small file. So I downloaded them all, and sure enough, they're all AVI files. They weren't mm-hmm. compressed or anything, so when I downloaded them, they were ready to go.
Yeah.
If I double-clicked it, because it had the QuickTime icon on it, QuickTime would launch mm-hmm. and attempt to play it, but it couldn't. It would come up and say, this is an unknown format, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. It doesn't work. So I did a search, and I already had the software on my computer anyways. I don't remember why, but I had downloaded it for something mm-hmm. else. It's called VLC Media Player, and you can find it if you go to versiontracker.com, do a search for VLC Media Player, and you'll find it. It's a free program,
mm-hmm.
and it plays AVI files. And I tried it. It worked great. Here's the... Well, here.
Now, this isn't a plugin for QuickTime, like, say, nope, Flip or Mac.
This is a completely independent software package
mm-hmm.
that has its own player and everything, and it's very intuitive to use. I was kind of curious on... number one, I've never really downloaded anything like the Bullshit series.
Mm-hmm.
I've never downloaded any of those kind of videos because if it's something that I want, I'll just go out and buy the DVD.
Right.
But this is for testing purposes. I wanted to see what the big deal was about downloading video from the internet. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's that big of a deal, but here, Chad, while you're sitting here, I'm going to give you a demonstration of the VLC, and you can see the image quality. I'm going to go to full screen. You tell me what you think about this.
A hippie bashing. It was starting to seem like
nice. Very nice.
They were going to change it up inside.
Look, I think that looks fantastic.
Oh, it's as good as a television.
It's as good as a television.
Actually, I saw that episode.
Did you?
Yeah, when I was working down in Indy, I had two Showtime channels in the hotel room.
That's episode 4 from season 2, War on Drugs.
Yep.
So, AVI files, you can play them in the VLC media player, and you can see it looks great.
Yeah.
It's just very impressive.
Very
so,
nice
in
job.
Some respects, I can kind of understand why some people are going nuts for downloading television series and shows, pirating them off the internet. If the quality is like that, wow.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as a Mac user, I'm not going to be able to convert that to anything. There might be plugins for QuickTime that'll allow you to watch AVI files. I just used a VLC player, and it worked great. You saw it. Look how nice it looked.
Great.
There are a few hiccups sometimes. Occasionally, it will just stop playing, or the whole screen will kind of go green, and it'll continue playing. You'll hear it, but there'll be no picture.
Right.
So I pause it and unpause it, and it's fine again. So it's just weird little things like that. It didn't do that on the G5 with a more powerful processor, but on the laptop, 1 gigahertz G4, every now and then it would hiccup a little bit. But usually I found that it did that when it was hot. Next week, or I should say tomorrow being Friday, you guys are probably going to hear this on Thursday, even though we're recording on a Wednesday. But Friday of this week, I'm going to have a review posted of Timbuktu Pro 8.6. Give that a look. I'm real impressed with Timbuktu Pro.
Yeah, you've always got Timbuktu. Though.
Yeah, there's a couple little issues that I really wasn't happy about, and people can go check out my review on Friday about that. But for those who are looking for a solution, let's say you have a laptop and a desktop. You're in your desktop could be anywhere in the house, but you're wirelessly most of the time on the laptop.
Right.
What if you need to access your G5? You don't want to have to get up and go to that computer too. Well, with Timbuktu, you can literally log into your other computer and you can see that screen. You could control that screen. It's really eerie if you're sitting in front of a computer that someone is controlling via Timbuktu because you're watching your mouse move around seemingly all by itself. Windows are popping open. It's kind of eerie. Like, ooh, it's like a ghost in my machine. but I'm real impressed with the new version. It has a lot of things going good for it, including working with Skype. One of the problems that I had with Timbuktu, unless you went, if you were behind a router or a firewall, you literally had to open a port on your own router to allow traffic from Timbuktu to contact your machine over the internet and control it. Well, that's a big security flaw right there.
Right.
And most, let's be honest, most home users aren't going to know how to open up a firewall port or a port on their router to allow traffic in.
Yeah.
With the new version of Skype, or Timbuktu, what the heck is that?
That's my phone.
That's Chad's phone. It's Sasa. It's Sasa. I like how your phone kind of matched the whole Sasa thing.
Salsa. I'll take that later.
Yeah. So with Timbuktu Pro 8.6, if you have Skype running and you set it up to use it, it will actually use the Skype connection, which is fantastic. So now someone only has to open up Skype, and then you can do it via Timbuktu. And you saw that we did it actually here. I left Timbuktu running or Skype running on my home computer.
Yep.
And then here at Chad's house, I actually logged into my G5 through Skype. It worked great. It's a nice solution if you guys are looking for remote control software and don't want to pay the huge price for Apple's desktop remote. That's another way to go. So that's our show this week. We really would like some feedback from you guys. Chad, tell them the number. Oh, they're not going to give up calling, are you?
No.
Is it work-related or is it family?
Family.
Oh, let's put them on the podcast.
No.
Is anybody I know? We're not going to give up till you answer your phone.
No, they just left a message, that's all.
Oh, okay. So give us a call on our feedback audio line. It's 1-801-938-5559. Not a lot of people have been using it lately. I thought more people would leave audio feedback.
Because we'd really like to hear from you.
We want to hear from you. We get the emails.
Even if it's nothing in general.
Yeah. we do have, we'll save it for next week. I don't want to give anything away.
Right.
And we do have a tentative guest for next week.
We do.
Yeah. But we'll see if it goes through or not.
Yeah.
And I will say that we are in discussions to have another person on the podcast that has been requested not just a few times. And we'll see where discussions go and how it works into other people's schedule. And if it works out, we're going to have some really cool guests coming up here in the future.
Great.
One of them, I know for a fact, has already agreed, and that's Guy Kawasaki. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure of the date yet, but we're going to have Guy Kawasaki. New Mac users probably are like, who the heck is Guy Kawasaki? If you're an old-time Mac user, you know who Guy Kawasaki is.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the most influential Mac people in the world for a number of years. He was probably, at the time, more powerful in the Mac universe than the current CEO of Apple was, which was Michael Spindler then.
Mm-hmm.
He was more powerful than that. And, you know, when people talk about Mac evangelists, Mac fanatics, it really started, for the most part, with Guy Kawasaki. And once we get him on the show, we'll ask him about that. And I actually took him to task in an article I wrote years ago for that. But he started a mailing list called The Evangelist. And when somebody would write something negative about Mac or the Apple, or I should say Apple or the Mac, he would post that to his list, and he had literally thousands and thousands of people on his mailing list.
Wow.
Let's say John Dvorak wrote something negative about Apple or something derogatory about the Macintosh. Guy Kawasaki would post it to his list and say, set this writer straight. Be nice, but set him straight. The writer in question would just get slammed with email from Mac users the world over. And that's kind of where the whole cult of Mac thing came from, the cultist attitude that some PC users have towards Macintosh. Now, you guys are Mac users. We're Mac users. There's no cult here.
Right.
But, you know, that's where it came from. Is the goat ready? We need to go slaughter that goat real quick, Chad?
Yeah, almost. Okay.
It's time for bloodletting, right?
That's right. We're getting a MacBook.
The Mac diet book.
Yeah.
That's the show. We'll see you guys next week. Give us some feedback. And don't forget to enter the contest. Send your entries to
contest@mymac.com.
Make sure you include your name, address, and phone number in the body of the message so we know where to ship the product to.
Yep.
Actually, it'll probably be a download.
And this is for volumes 9 and 10 of Slick Transition Effects from G3 Software.
And thanks to Bruce G for that. Thanks to Market Share this week for the interview, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. And thanks to Ramjet.com is our new sponsor. Smalldog.com is the oldest sponsor in the world for us. We really appreciate their support. And, of course, Innotech.com for hosting the MyMac.com website.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.